Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. This is podcast number 62. We are going to talk about the box office numbers. We're going to give brief reviews on The Wolfman, Percy Jackson,
and Crazy Heart.
Probably get into a little bit of news.
Maybe some TV,
maybe some video games.
Yeah.
We'll Mazer's been playing Mass Effect 2.
Awesome. I'm not done yet. It's going to be like a month. Who knows?
But let's get started. Box office numbers. Number one, Valentine's Day weekend, long weekend. Valentine's Day, the movie, came in at number one at $56.4 million. No surprise there. You know, it's Valentine's Day. Everybody wanted to go see the movie.
I was surprised President's Day, the movie, didn't take over on Monday. Didn't take the crown from Valentine's Day.
As a much less prestigious cast, George Lopez was in it as well, though, for some reason. But the rest of the cast, Carrot Top was in there.
You're talking about President's Day, the movie.
President's Day, the movie. But for some reason, yeah, George Lopez is the link in that chain. In that fake movie chain.
I don't think anyone here saw it, did they?
Don't care to, no.
No.
And if you did, don't admit it.
If you're still talking about President's Day, the movie, I just want to make clear that that's a fake movie. But no, none of us saw Valentine's Day. I don't know, Monica over at Cinematical wrote a really great article that that I read, I guess she wrote it yesterday or something. So check that out at cinematical.com, and she was just writing about how, like, female audiences are way too forgiving. Like, they're willing to pay money to see these kinds of movies.
Well, of course they are. Because of, you know, the ensemble casts and stuff. Hollywood knows.
And she's just like, she put into words what I think every time I see a trailer for one of these.
Why do you think Dear John came in number one last week?
Yeah.
Because women rule the box office, and they are willing to forgive.
Yeah.
You mean, like, women are half the population? That's weird. That's crazy talk.
They seem to have some power over their boyfriends and or significant others, too.
Or they watch the films themselves and just bring their friends. Weird.
Yeah. Crazy.
I don't get it, but whatever.
So let me get this straight. It's called Valentine's Day? I was under the impression all these years, Valentine's Day.
No, it's Valentine's Day.
Okay.
Is that a 30 Rock reference?
Yeah, I'm on Valentine's Day, I guess.
Okay. Number two, The Wolfman came out. It's in its first week. Made $31.7 million. We'll talk about that later. Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief, made $31.4 million. Number four, Avatar, overtook Dear John. Remember Dear John was number one last weekend.
They're fighting it out.
And now Avatar
has reclaimed.
Next week, Avatar number one over all those other films that just got released.
Wow.
It's going to be that funny.
Avatar made another $23.5 million, and that's been in the theater, 9 weeks now?
Yep. Yeah, something like that.
Number five, Dear John, made $16.0 million.
Right on.
.05.
I just need to know, like, the top three films were released this week, and the total of all the five is almost $160 million.
Yeah,
that's a pretty big weekend for films.
That's a good amount of that.
So I think we're going to see.
You had that extra day.
Mm-hmm. You have the extra day.
Valentine's Day being kind of a date night kind of thing. So,
well, do they count the extra day? I think it's just, this is just the weekend.
I guess that's true. Well, is Monday counted? No, not really.
This is just the weekend. 160 for a weekend. That's pretty good. We're going to see. Probably going to see this turn into a bigger box office day. I mean, we already had three, but next year we might have four or five.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And
number six, we're leaving the double-digit numbers now, by the way. We jumped from $16 million to $6 million for Dwayne Johnson's Tooth Fairy. Anyone? No? Okay, we're moving
on. What happened to him? Like, I really thought that he was going to be
the next big... Well, Schwarzenegger did a few, you know, crappy kids films.
But
at the same time, he still made really fun and big budget.
I'm talking about Schwarzenegger. Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of, is there even an iconic, like, that is an action film with Dwayne Johnson or, quote, The Rock? in it. I'm trying to think of a film, and I can't think of a film that's actually good.
Did you ever see Doom?
That was, he wasn't even, like, the main guy in that, but... I mean, the rundown, but that's like more of a comedy, like a buddy comedy thing anyway. Scorpion King,
it was a remake too.
I didn't even know that.
I thought he would be, definitely thought Dwayne Johnson would be a bigger,
because I like him, he's charismatic.
But now every film he makes is a kids film.
Yeah.
By Disney.
He sold his soul to Disney. Let's just put it
hopefully
out there. That's what
he
happened.
Just like signed a 6-picture deal with them, and like he's coming out of the other end, and he'll get back into making decent movies again.
I don't know. We'll see.
You don't sound too
Disney's
enthusiastic.
Done some
that.
Interesting films that you know they could have. I mean, I didn't see Race to Witch Mountain, but I don't know if there was any. Was it?
I think these actors who kind of just have like a big movie or coming out hot at the gate, they'll sign these deals like so far in advance. Like Taylor Lautner, he has like 5,000-6,000 films.
Yeah,
he's doing like one or two films in, he's gonna realize, oh wait, this thing I wanted to do a couple years ago, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah,
and he's stuck having to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why people like Brad Pitt, they sign one picture at a time. That's why Brad Pitt was able to do Inglourious on such short notice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way to do it. I'm sure Dwayne Johnson has all of these movies coming out. He signed. He's like, money? Okay. Yeah, money? Okay.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, crap, now I got to do all this crap.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still holding that hope, though. We'll see.
Yeah.
Hold on to that hope. You do that, and we'll
report back.
We'll report back in 5 years and see where we're at. Yeah, number 7, From Paris with Love, second week in the road, dropped down to $5.5 million. That movie isn't feeling any love at all, is it?
No. Deservedly not.
Number 8, Edge of Darkness, $4.8 million. Number 9, Crazy Heart, which we will talk about, $4 million. And number 10, When in Rome, at $3.7 million. So that rounds off your top 10. Now let's talk about the Wolfman.
What kind of animal could have done such a thing?
You're risking your life. Darkness comes for you.
He's been quite seriously injured.
Thank you for staying with me.
Now we know it's still out there.
You were bitten by the beast. You bear his mark now.
You believe in curses.
You have to leave.
What are you afraid of?
There are those who doubt the power to change men into beasts. A beast has come among us.
Terrible things, Lawrence. You've done terrible things.
No, I didn't see it. Did all three of you guys see it?
I did not see it either.
I've seen it.
So Bankman saw it.
And Froman's seen it. Yeah.
Froman.
All right.
And a lot of the screenings were sold out.
Oh yeah, when we went to the theater,
we're like, oh,
I didn't think it'd be like a big movie that would sell out, and so we
showed up like 4 minutes in advance.
And then you showed up in line, and
we're
like,
we were a good hour.
Yeah, we were a good hour.
We were a good hour.
We're not those a-holes who walk in like 5 minutes into the opening credits, what's going on?
Where's all the seats at?
Is that seat taken? Can you scoot over? Is that seat taken? What does shush mean?
So we went and saw this film, Universal Pictures remake of the 1930s classic. Unfortunately, everyone in this movie dropped the ball. All the talent creatively
Is this a film that had all the right elements and just kind of fell flat, or is this a film that just went off in a direction that was just not good?
It had the right elements.
Yeah, definitely.
It had a great storyline. It had a
great cast.
It had hit and miss on the special effects. I like the transformation scenes of the special effects.
They did practical, is what I they tried to do some practical, and they did some enhancements,
it's like,
computer.
Mixing it up and stuff like that. And then there were these weird special effects scenes. We'll get into that, though. But yeah, all the elements were there to make a good film, and I'm a big fan of the director, Joe Johnston, and
The Rocketeer is like seriously one of my favorite movies ever.
October Sky. The Rocketeer, October Sky, one of my all-time favorite movies. Jurassic Park 3. Look, okay, I know it wasn't the best, but it was,
you know,
it was
Jurassic
a fun
Park
movie.
3?
I
enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too.
It was
Don't shake your head.
I can't sign off on this.
It was an hour and a half. You knew exactly what you were getting into, and it wasn't
dinosaurs in this one?
It would, yeah. Hey,
well, it didn't feel like it fell into the formula
Yeah, sorry. Time out.
We're getting off for the rails.
It was better than 2.
Yeah. I don't know. That's debatable.
I mean, 1 is the best.
Yes,
1 is the best.
Something we can all agree on. Yes.
Okay.
All right, so back to the Wolfman.
Yes.
So all the right elements were there, but unfortunately, the execution of all of them were poorly made.
When you say it has a good cast, but earlier you said creatively, pretty much everybody dropped the ball. You mean like it has a good cast on paper? Like this team up of people sounds like they would be able to work
for the most part. They're all really good in the film. Emily Blunt's great. Hugo Weaving.
Anthony Hopkins was awesome.
Yeah,
you know he got to go into more of a sinister role again, which was really cool to see.
Yeah,
Hugo Weaving just stole every scene he was in. You can't go wrong with that guy. You can give him any kind of dialogue, even if it sucks, and he's going to make it good.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Benicio Del Toro, just...
And this was his pet project.
He's
the one who's like, hey, I want to remake this movie. I really love these old Universal films. And Universal, like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea. Let's go for it. Unfortunately,
he looks very wolf-like already.
Yeah, but just because you look wolf-like, I don't know, man. His acting ability, his acting in it was not very good at all, and his accent was in and out all the way through it.
Oh yeah, really?
Yeah. Well,
one of the big things is the fact that we wanted to like this picture.
If you've read the site, you know. I was all about this movie.
Yeah.
Regardless of all the negativity about it, you know, with all the reshoots, rewrites, rescores, re-edits.
Other directors stepping
remaking the whole remake, other directing stepping, everything, you know, all the negativity of this movie did not sway me from wanting to like this film. The trailer sold me on the film.
Yeah.
I watched the trailer, I was like, this film is going to be awesome. I don't care what anybody says.
I was never on board. It didn't seem like it had. Usually, when you do a remake, you find you do the through line which connects it to the original material, but you got to find that little bit that makes it a little more your own, a little like darker or twisted or something that makes it new.
It was a lot darker and a lot more twisted than the original Wolfman.
Was it better?
The story-wise, the potential was there.
Yeah.
But the script sucked ass.
Yeah. So was it just the dialogue, or was it how the succession of the plot
went? The dialogue. It was the editing.
Is atrocious.
Was awful. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Hard edits, really.
Just like it would just cut right off in the middle of a conversation and go to another new scene, and you're like, it never went back.
Yeah, really
and you're like,
abrasive
editing. What happened there?
Editing is supposed to be something that's seamless that you don't even notice.
Movie, it's like, it would go
well,
in
I have to
face.
Wonder
it
if
took
it,
me out of the movie. Every time there was an edit, I was pulled out.
I think just as an editor, you would try to smooth these things through, but maybe there was something that was so bad that they had to do these hard cuts to keep it from being worse.
Well, either that, or those scenes were never shot in the first place.
Right, they're just taking...
There was nothing there to make this movie flow smoothly. It was like driving down a really bumpy road the whole time.
But you think with reshoots, you would find a way to...
They reshot some stuff, but they reshot stuff that they had already filmed. They didn't go film new scenes.
Yeah. Pickup shots.
Well, that's probably... The reshoots were probably why Benicio Del Toro's accent goes in and out. That's probably, like, a key...
Who knows?
But they try to point it out
in the film that his mom was Spanish.
Yeah.
But he was raised in America, right?
By an English father.
Yeah, I don't know. They tried to cover up the fact that he had the accent, but every time it slipped, because he tried really hard to keep his American accent, but it just would slip out, and you're just like, oh.
I just feel like these characters had so much potential, like you were saying, and I think that a lot of it got shortchanged. Like Hugo Weaving, like if it was just Benicio del Toro against Hugo Weaving, great movie, or if it was just the really Shakespearean kind of relationship Benicio has with Anthony Hopkins, with his father, that's a great story. Or if it's just the love story between Emily Blunt and Benicio's character, that would have been great. If it allowed those characters to develop and those relationships.
Develop the stories,
or one or two, or just touch a little bit on this. But having all those three kind of going and not fully satisfying any of those.
Getting a little bit into Spider-Man 3 syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was.
It's so weird though, because...
And I it was crazy when, you know, there was that scene where Benicio was like walking down the streets of London and he had his hair all down, it was all emo look, and I was like, what is he doing? He's like dancing down the street. I was like, what is this?
Pointing, giving people the double guns left and right.
That's a joke, but there is the just the passage of time, because... How often does a full moon occur?
A full moon occurs. Let's just
once
a month, right? In this movie,
it feels like a month has kind of somewhat gone.
Yeah, it starts off good,
and then
after that, it's like full moon after full moon after full moon. It's like every night's a full moon, and the Wolfman's coming out. You know, it's like.
So yeah, I don't know. Just ultimately for me, just going in with such. I wouldn't say high expectations, because I knew there's probably going to be some problems, but going with such a positive outlook.
Yeah.
I remember telling Venkman after the movie, I'm like, it felt like you were at Thanksgiving dinner and your mom had made everything, right? Your mom had slaved in the kitchen for hours and hours, and you eat like the dinner part comes out and you eat the turkey. It's a little dry. You're like, oh, that's fine. It's good. This is a loving dinner. And then you know, like the stuffing comes out a little burnt. You're like, okay, it's fine. You know, you just in your head, you want it to be good.
Yeah.
And then like dessert rolls around, and like the pumpkin pie is all runny, and you're all like, screw this, mom! This dinner sucks.
Dude, that's exactly what it was like. Because as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, and that's exactly how what we talked about after the movie. Yeah. I'm sitting here, I'm watching it in the middle of the movie, and I'm like. Oh, this isn't that bad. Oh, I like this, yeah. And I was trying to talk myself into liking this movie. I'm like, oh, yeah, I could give this a good review because it did that.
I could spin this somehow.
I could make this work to give this movie a good review. And then by the end of the film, it spoiler, I put this in my review, but whatever, spoiler.
You can just put it this way: is when he becomes the Wolfman, he carries no memories of himself. Like he doesn't know what he's doing. He has no control over himself. Yet he fights a character. That why would you fight this character if he didn't know who he was, right?
Exactly. Well, yeah.
And then he doesn't recognize Emily Blunt's character.
Yeah, so he's fighting somebody. He recognizes that he's fighting this person. He knows he wants to kill this person. But then all of a sudden, Emily Blunt comes into play, and he doesn't recognize her at all. Tries to run after her and kill her.
Yeah.
Seems like a...
It's like, dude, you guys have, like, you know, professed your love to each other, and you don't even... you recognize the person you hate, but not the person you love? Come on.
Yeah, it sounds like a continuity problem.
But the very end, the one that had the audience busting up laughing, and there was a comment in the review I wrote, and I put this scene in my review. The commenter said, "I seriously doubt anybody in the theater laughed at this scene."
Everybody.
I seriously guarantee that everyone in the theater laughed at this scene.
Yeah.
But it was the final death scene.
Yeah.
All right, and no joke, it was like, okay, we'll do a little background. First of all, when the wolf is shot with the silver bullet and dies, right, he doesn't turn back into a human till after he's dead.
You're just going over werewolf lore.
Werewolf lore, right? Okay. Well, in this movie, he's shot with the silver bullet. he turns back into a human. So we assume that he's dead, but then he starts talking as a human. Okay? So he's not dead.
Did he expunge the bullet from himself?
No, he didn't, right?
Okay, so it was still in there.
It was still in there.
He didn't birth bullets like in Underworld?
Nope. And so he sees it, and then he offers this line of dialogue to Emily Blunt's character. Do you remember what it was?
I just remember the aftermath of after he delivers
this. Anyway, he delivers this atrocious dialogue, and then, no joke, it was like one of these...
Like high school play.
High school play death scenes where he's like...
Close his eyes and
just and his head turns to the side really quick. You can't see it, but it's
can't see what Beckman's doing.
He just did the most traumatic.
But his head turns to the side really quick, like, oh yeah, I'm dead now.
Just imagine someone doing a sit up, and then closing their eyes, turn their head, and then going back down.
Just imagine Shatner doing a death.
Yeah. That's it. There it is. It's a Shatner death scene.
I laughed at just the concept. To see that yeah. would be hilarious.
And at that point, everyone in the theater laughed. And it literally destroyed any hope this movie had of getting a good review from me.
It ends on that. And like if something that laughable came out like kind of in the middle of the thing, I think people would be a little more forgiving. But people walking out literally were just like, that's the worst thing I've ever seen. That was awful.
Okay, wow. Well, this is a creature film, so you haven't talked about the effects or the makeup.
The visual style was awesome. I loved the visual style of London and the European setting, the tone of the film. You know, everything was dark and gritty, and you know, it had a kind of...
It felt lived in.
Exactly.
Didn't have that weird kind of Ben Helsing sort of like fake dirtiness to it. It really felt like
yeah.
we were in that era.
Yeah. So I really like that. The special effects of the film, like we were talking about earlier, you're in and out. The transformation effects were done really well. There was a mixture of practical and CGI animation.
That's what's. I mean.
When he's the wolf, though, and he's running through the streets of London and on the rooftops and stuff, there's this weird camera.
Well, it feels
wolf cam?
No,
wolf cam. Yeah,
it feels like it cuts in from like a normal movie to like a Benny Hill.
Yeah. Oh, so they probably like digitally sped it up because the wolf was too slow because the guy's in makeup or something.
Yeah. It felt like frames were dropping, right? It just felt like so choppy and like,
you're just like what are they trying to accomplish here? It was not smooth. So when the wolf is running around London,
yeah,
and they have this shot of him where it's you know at his face and he's like trucking on the rooftops of London. And everything—it's just so weird how they did it. And it just every time that it came up, and that was one of the things. I'm watching the movie,
really
trying to like it, and I'm like, "Why is it doing this? Why is it? Why is it made? Why are these effects so bad?"
Well, speeding up stuff is really tricky. You see this? They try to do this in Hong Kong films sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they do it to good effect, and other times, many times, not. But, I mean, I just know that there's optical flow technology that you could use to make this stuff look...
Like seamless?
It's pretty
well,
seamless.
Well, if there was anything they could have done to make it look better, they didn't use it. The movie's rated R, so there's blood.
Blood, yeah.
It's definitely bloody. There's claw slashes and guts spilt and heads decapitated. You get all that stuff. And so it's like... Going for gore? Yeah, this movie has definitely got the gore.
Okay.
So,
final verdict?
Final
rental.
Rental?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if you're a big fan of these Universal films, I think it's a kind of a step forward. You go, okay, this is what we did wrong. Hopefully they bring something else back.
Well, I think these creature films usually have no bar for drama and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You just usually judge these things on the makeup and the effects.
Exactly.
And the fact that you guys are talking about all these... character type things, I think, means that they aimed higher, but they didn't make it.
Exactly. Yeah. They aimed high and they missed big time. So, it's our review of The Wolfman.
So, this weekend, I watched Percy Jackson, The Lightning Thief. Well, it's Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief.
They found him.
Who found me?
We've been expecting you.
The gods are real.
My father's Poseidon,
god of the seas.
Between myths and legends,
Zeus's bolt is the most powerful weapon ever created.
It's been stolen. Between this world and the next,
if it's not returned by the summer solstice, there will be a war.
Are three heroes.
All demigods have inherited skills.
I definitely have strong feelings for you. I just haven't decided if they're positive or negative yet.
Who must stand and fight?
We'll find the bolt.
There's nowhere safe on heaven and earth for him now.
Big fan of the story because I went through all five books. I just kind of the trailer got me intrigued. And then after that, I went through the first book and I was like, cool. And then after the second one and then the third one, it was like crack pretty much. I just went through all of them in probably a period of like 2 or 3 weeks.
Nice.
And they're really great. I got my wife reading them. And we went and I watched this film and I was just completely crushed because this film was done so terribly.
This is from director Chris Columbus.
Chris
Columbus
did the first two Harry Potters. The first two Harry Potters, and then the third one, the studio basically forced him out.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why this film was done by Fox.
Okay.
And I'm glad to see so far there has been no talk about a second Percy Jackson because I think they just need to stop.
Yeah. Just cut their losses now.
Just such a disregard for the source material.
Yeah, it's always bad, especially for a kid's movie.
I mean, for those who haven't read the books and then gone through, the only thing I can liken this to is if they made a Lord of the Rings film and they cut out Gimli and Legolas because you wanted more time for the central characters. It seems like, I mean, with books, I mean, there's always things you can cut and you can compress. And there's a part in the movie, I was into the film for maybe about 20 minutes. And then I felt like, okay, they were just compressing. That happens. And suddenly they started like ditching important plot points that will be very, very important in books 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right.
And they just cut them. They don't even allude to loose ties. They don't do anything. There's ways that characters that are introduced in the book that I can understand wanting to change things, but it's very descriptive to a character. I mean, when you change those kind of, imagine if you don't introduce Aragorn as Strider in the way he's introduced, you just, I'm Aragorn, yeah. I will help you. I mean, that would be completely, that would be wrong. I tweeted this. I said, why make a film if you're going to change 80% of it? Now, there's films that this has worked. The Bourne series. I mean, if those who've read the Bourne series, you know this takes place in the 60s. It talks about Vietnam. I forgot what the female character is. She doesn't even die. There's all sorts of stuff. There's a whole thing with the counter assassin that he's trying to play against called Carlos. And I mean, these are things that it just completely redid, and they just kept the essence of Bourne. With Percy Jackson, you need these details and all this world. I mean, there's scenes, they cut out the God of War. He fights the God of War. You cut out the scene where he fights the God of War. You make Hades, you make him a weak rock star. Why? You turn the gods into like any opportunity that you get that you interact with the gods in the book is always an interesting thing. And what they did is they tried to inject Uma Thurman's Medusa in almost as many instances as they can find. So this film to me is a horrible, horrible film. Walking out, I mean, this is a kid's book, so there was kids 12, 16, all the, and they were just laughing about how terrible this film was.
I've heard that too. I've heard
didn't
even like.
They were like, this is a crap film. And some kids said, this is an effing terrible film. F Columbus and Dad, you know.
Keep in mind, these are 8-year-olds.
And then they would talk about the actors, like the guys go, that girl's, she's kind of hot. And then people are like, no, she's not. And then the girl's like, oh, but what? And then, you know, that's what they ended up talking about. Not like how cool it was.
Yeah.
They just talked about the actors and about how crappy the film was.
Yeah.
so bad.
That's not a good sign.
Yeah, especially when you're trying to develop
such
a franchise.
There's such a huge potential, because no joke, in the fifth book, it's nothing but these half-god children fighting all over Manhattan against the Titans. Like, who does not want to see that movie?
That sounds
you
like...
can't get there because you've removed all the details that would make that possible.
That sounds exactly like something the studios would want. Like, that's something they would salivate over, is just people wrecking through Manhattan and causing as much distress. Yeah. I mean, that's the final scene
now,
of Transformers.
Thing is, the book, the fifth one, I don't know if the author was unhappy or whatever, but this book, I think, came out... He was writing it while they were producing the film. So in some ways, he almost upped the visual game of the fifth book.
Right. Of try and adapt this.
Yeah, try and adapt this and try to cut this. Because basically all the details that they cut from the first film, essential in the fifth.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, just it's so amazing to see. I don't know if it's Fox mistrust in Chris Columbus, because Warner Brothers was able to at least get two, you know, maybe one and a half good Harry Potter films out of Chris Columbus, and he's just wrecked this possible new five films you could have made. I mean, and these are not even like thick Harry Potter books. They got thicker and thicker. These are about the same thickness. They're about like an inch and a half, and like this could have been a two and a half hour film. There did not need to be any need to cut out stuff, and they included unnecessary stuff. Dumb jokes. They changed locations. You can do that kind of, but when you're bringing in things from other books...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they brought...
oh, they brought stuff from like two...
Yeah, they brought stuff from two and three, and they brought it in, and it's like, why would you bring stuff from two and three into the first book if you're cutting out important stuff in the first... So it just... Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. You think they kind of knew this might be the only film they released, but I don't know. The studio, they'd want a franchise.
You would want... this franchise.
Yeah.
I just hope that they would let that sit and cool off, give it 5 or so years.
Yeah, and it seems like Percy Jackson and the Olympians, colon, The Lightning Thief. Like, that's just a setup for, colon, whatever the next titles of these other films could be. Like,
yeah. And I think he just... I mean, I think he knows what he's doing technically, but in terms of some of the visuals and stuff like that, it just wasn't that interesting.
Yeah. Was Medusa hot in the book? Because Uma Thurman.
Medusa, I mean, they stick pretty close to the lore. I mean, Medusa is cursed with the snake hairs, but also to be terribly ugly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's Uma Thurman. And, I mean, pretty much, I mean, you know, they're going to cut off her head and they're going to have it. And they kind of do that and that's it. They have the head with them the whole time, and it's pretty unnecessary.
Huh. Is Uma Thurman's head, like, severed head talking to them the whole time?
No, but it's like, how many times can you bring her back into the story? It's just really, really wrong.
Now, we're talking about her head. Is it still hot?
No.
Gross.
Give me some positives. Any?
I don't see any positives.
Wow.
I don't know, I think we were saying
there's a cool scene. Like, there's cool scenes that you're like, oh, that could have been so cool. Because you have, like, Capture the Flag, but with, like, basically, like, two Spartan armies playing Capture the Flag, and they're sword fighting, they're going all at it.
Yeah.
But they didn't even really play Capture the Flag. They just played Get to the Flag. Like, what? That's not even Capture
the Flag. Yeah. Seems like just an entire movie of missed potential.
I think all the casting for the gods was cool. I like the actors that they got. But I just...
The kids, not good?
The kids, I think maybe if they had a better director, they could have steered them, you know. But, I mean, they talked about, there's one character who's supposed to be blonde, not blonde. I think the kids just pointed that out. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess. I mean, it's not important.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's all sorts of little things. Like I said, imagine if they cut out, you know, Legolas and Gimli out of the Lord of the Rings film. Yeah. It just wouldn't make sense to you.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
Well, a big thing you said...
And they rewrote the entire plot.
Huh.
Rewrote it.
I don't get that. You know, like, you're adapting something that has a built-in audience. And so what you're doing, and what they've already done, I guess, with the younger fans, is they've alienated these younger fans.
Yeah.
Like, our friend's daughter, she's 12.
Yeah.
Hated the movie, and is just so sad. Like, they changed everything in the book. Super pissed. Like, pissing off a parent... Or not living up to the expectations of what older people expect movies to be, the certain dramatic things or certain there's a certain campiness that you can get away with children films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you alienate these kids, you're not going to get any merchandise sales, you know? Like, not going to get all the money-making revenues that you could get from a film like this. You're just cutting off.
So. Yeah. I don't know which filmmaker would be right for this, just off the top of my head, but anyone but Chris Columbus. Goodness sake.
Whoa, he directed Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, he directed Mrs.
That's really kind of disappointing for me, too, because, like, I'm just,
I was looking forward to, like, five of these films, and I was like, after I read that fifth book, I was like, that's going to be an awesome film.
Yeah.
It's going to be great, like, 5 or 7 years from now, when I actually watched that final battle. That's going to be awesome, because it's start to finish, it's pretty one long battle.
Yeah.
And that would be cool.
Yeah.
But, no.
Read
the books. Read the books, folks.
All right.
If that's the only thing I can say, salvage out of this, is just say read the books and just go, someday.
Yeah.
Someone will do this right.
There's been some talk about whether or not Logan Lerman's going to be in the new Spider-Man and stuff. Like, I mean, we've had this conversation before briefly about how, like, we don't know how legit those conversations really are, but, like, his name has been kind of thrown around for Mark Webb's new take on Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And, some people, I think Screen Rant might have been one of them, that was just like suggesting maybe this is a make or break thing for Logan Lerman, like whether or not Percy Jackson, his performance in it,
if
or whether
he,
or not
if
the movie
can,
does
if he
well
can
or...
act, you can't tell.
Really?
He pretty much seems like a slightly different, he's like, he looks like, he seems like a Zac Efron with slightly different coloring. He doesn't have anything there.
Yeah.
Gravitas.
Yeah, there's no gravitas. I mean, well, just the way, I mean, they rewrote the way, I mean, Percy's supposed to be 12. And there's a very serious plot point about when he turns 16. It's all leading up to this bigger prophecy of when one of the children of the big three gods, Poseidon, Hades, and Zeus, turn 16. They're going to decide the fate of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this whole huge thing. Cut. And the thing, and there's a whole thing, that's the reason why, like, the big three don't have children anymore, and Percy was born after that pact, and there's, you know, I mean, there's more to that, and then this one, they just say, oh, Zeus just didn't want anyone to visit their kids. Like, that's how dumbed down they tried to make the plot.
Wow.
And, yeah.
That's really disappointing. Because I'm a huge fan of like the Greek and Roman mythology and all that stuff.
Oh, they get into obscure stuff and they bring it up in very cool, entertaining ways. And I mean, there's all these little things that
talk about the book.
In the book, yeah. In the book, it's great, and you'll enjoy whoever. If you love Greek mythology, you're gonna enjoy the way Rick Riordan has found a way to make, you know, mythology connect with these 12-year-olds, 16-year-olds. And it's a shame that they're just going to, I mean, the books are great, but there's a shame that there's, I mean, what happens with these films is people who never, I mean, how many people have read The Lightning Thief? Probably not as many as, say, Harry Potter, but the movie could have been a good chance for there to be kind of a second franchise out there.
Bad news.
Bad news.
Okay, so last week I got a chance to see Scott Cooper's debut film called Crazy Heart.
What's your real name?
I'm Bad Blake. My tombstone will have my real name on it. Until then, I'm just gonna stay bad.
Your heart's on the loose. You rolled in sevens with nothing to lose.
Where'd all those songs come from?
Life, unfortunately.
Place for the weird kind.
I'm 57 years old. I'm broke.
Why don't you sit down and write some songs, huh?
Keep talking.
You called all your shots.
I keep feeling obliged to apologize for being less than you probably imagined me to be.
Somehow this don't feel like home anymore.
We ought to go out and find some trouble to get into.
Yeah, big trouble.
And this ain't no place for the weary kind.
I knew what the risks were with you, and I took them.
This is the Jeff Bridges, Maggie Gyllenhaal movie about Jeff Bridges playing a character named Bad Blake, who is a country, you know, a kind of a washed-up old country singer I got to see it on Thursday at a screening where Maggie Gyllenhaal was there at a Q&A afterwards, so that was kind of cool for her to be kind of answering questions about how she approached the character and things like that. And I guess this is as good a time as any to say that I've never really been that big of a Maggie Gyllenhaal fan. I thought she was passable in The Dark Knight, but definitely not one of my favorite parts of the movie.
She's Secretary?
I have not. That's the thing. I haven't seen Secretary or Sherry Baby. I really liked her in Stranger Than Fiction. Yeah, but that's, I haven't had that much of like exposure to her. But I haven't really liked her in that many things. But she was really good in this. From what I understand, her Oscar nomination for Best Actress for this movie came as kind of a shock to everybody. And I haven't seen enough of the like quote unquote Oscar bait movies to know if it was justified or not, you know, in comparison to these other movies that are out there. But I thought she did a really great job, and like, you know, just looking at that, I think it's warranted. She did some really good work here. So yeah, the movie, I mean, I really enjoyed the movie. It was, I want to make a concerted effort not to compare it to The Wrestler, just because I think everybody else is doing that, so I'm like trying to go against the grain and like not drawing
which you've just done. I know. Saying I'm not gonna do it.
I know.
Yeah, you know, it's like saying, telling someone's like, I'm not gonna say you're fat. I'm not gonna say that.
But
with all due respect.
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't know. I mean, I liked it. It was good. Robert Duvall was in it. He is, I guess, kind of discovered Scott Cooper, who apparently was an actor, or still is an actor, and Cooper tried to get the rights to the life story of Merle Haggard, and found the rights too difficult to obtain, so he turned to this novel called Crazy Heart that came out, you know, years ago, and just adapted that for the screen instead. And the reason I really like this movie is because, you know, separate from, with a country singer, kind of an older country singer, instantly, you know, more than The Wrestler, I think, comparisons come up to Walk the Line with Johnny Cash from a few years ago when Joaquin Phoenix did that movie. Yeah. But the reason I think I like Crazy Heart a little bit more than Walk the Line is because we don't really know who Bad Blake is. Like, he's not a real person. We don't enter into the movie with our own preconceived notions of who this guy is, who he was, you know, what events in his life we think should be depicted on the screen, and like, so we're not sitting there waiting for, okay, when's he gonna show up in Folsom Prison, you know, like stuff like that. This character, he's an amalgamation of all of these famous country stars, but Scott Cooper gives us kind of a blank slate on him. Like, we don't know his life story. We don't know.
It's what Cameron Crowe did with Almost Famous, where he took a band, which, this is kind of like the Rolling Stones. This is kind of like Led Zeppelin. This is kind of so.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I liked it a lot for that reason, where you can instantly, you see Jeff Bridges, and you know, in the first 5 minutes of the movie, you know exactly his whole backstory. Like, you know what kind of character he is, but you also don't have those details that you're subconsciously worrying about
what
throughout the whole.
What drug was he addicted to?
He was just an alcoholic, and it was actually one of the best, like, portrayals of alcoholism that I've seen on the screen ever. Like, he did a really great job, and, you know, he ends up going to rehab at one point, but it's like, they shy away from a lot of the stereotypical, almost required scenes that you need for the depicting these kinds of through lines, these kinds of stories, and just stick to, the whole movie just feels very, very genuine, very real. Like you were saying about the Wolfman, it feels very lived in, like that world that they created feels lived in. This is very much the same thing.
So Jeff Bridges is, I think, it was Film Spotting's podcast, they talked about how we probably take Jeff Bridges for granted just because he's so good in all his roles.
Yeah.
Do you think this is going to be his film to,
that he's going to win the Oscar for?
Yeah,
I do. I think it was. It's getting a lot of buzz, and
he's got the Golden Globe in the bag already.
Yeah,
did he get the SAG?
I think so. I'm not sure about that, but yeah. I mean, he's just riding this wave of positive buzz and stuff for his performance, and it's all well deserved. Like, the thing that sucks is Sam Rockwell and Moon wasn't nominated. Like, Sony Pictures Classics or whoever released that movie didn't make push a push it. For it. And I think Sam Rockwell did a really awesome job, and I think he and George Clooney were the ones who could have really battled out between Jeff Bridges, but now that I think Bridges' performance in Crazy Heart was that much better than Clooney's in Up in the Air, where that difference there is Bridges is just going to come out on top at the end, I think.
Yeah.
And I also, like you were saying, that it's kind of a... Like, I've heard theories that Inglourious Basterds might win Best Picture now. Like, there's this kind of resurgence of support for Inglourious Basterds, and, you know, the theory is that the Academy is going to award Tarantino the Best Picture because they dropped the ball in 95 with Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
So, like, kind of the same thing might happen here, like what you're saying. Bridges has always been great in almost everything he's done. And
even in the terrible films he's
in. Yeah, exactly. He's always shining aspect of it, yeah. So I think this might be something like that, where they kind of retroactively award him the award, you know, for dropping the ball and not nominating, or giving him the Best Picture.
It's kind of like in sports when a referee does a bad call on one side of the court.
Yeah.
You know, like...
and then just lets something go later.
He lets something go, or he calls a BS call on the other side just to kind of even things out.
Yeah.
But we kind of saw that on the Golden Globes with Robert Downey Jr.'s win for Sherlock Holmes. It's like, yeah, he's good, but that's not like... an amazing role that should have won over these other people. So it's a definite possibility that they could be doing some corrective measures here.
This is
which you gotta like and not like, because sometimes you just feel like, you know, a particular year someone was really hot and
robbed because they were making these corrective changes or whatever. That's not to say that I don't think Clooney was fantastic in the Up in the Air, because he really was, but I just think this is Bridges' time.
And Rockwell and Clooney will have more great films.
Jeff Bridges is 60 years old, so he's getting up. I mean, he's not going away anytime soon, but he's getting up there. So.
Yeah, I've got to say, I'm not a country music fan by
I'm not either.
Any means.
And but I like the music.
Enjoyable?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Okay. Like, the music was one of the best parts of the movie, besides Bridges' performance. Like, I went home after I saw the movie and downloaded one of the songs off of iTunes, and I'm not even a country fan. Like, that's how much I enjoyed it. And the sound design was incredible in the movie, because Scott Cooper, I read or listened to an interview with him, and he was talking about how they mic'd up Bridges and the other singers on set, like, while they were filming, and had them actually record the music there, as well as doing the kind of like
studio
stuff, like as backups. Like most films, I think, if I'm not mistaken,
lip syncing.
Yeah, do the studio recordings and then lip sync to it.
Like a music video.
Yeah, and Scott Cooper had them actually sing and play the music like live while they were recording it, and whenever possible, he used that audio instead of the studio recordings. And it's very obvious that that's the case. Like, the music sounds amazing, and it sounds very
authentic. Real
and authentic. Yeah, very much so. I dug the music a lot. And
now, Crazy Heart is in a fairly limited release currently, right?
I think so.
It's widened. I remember last week we're like, oh, it's on the map now, but it's kind of...
Yeah, it's either just become open up or opened up to a bunch of theaters,
It's in 1,000, which is about half of what... Well, a third.
Half or a third of what...
Half or a third of normal.
Okay. I think...
You can probably find it.
Limited release, but it's going to... If these awards and stuff, and especially if Bridges wins for, or Gyllenhaal, for that matter, wins for Best Actor or Best Actress, it's going to be, you know, get a wider release, so people will have a chance to check it out if it's not in theaters near you. But normally I would say, like, don't see this movie in theaters, because it's not necessary for it. Like, in today's, whatever, economy, blah, blah, blah.
Economy slash you can own something on
months
Blu-ray.
Later and stuff,
yeah,
and, it's,
on
and
Blu-ray
have, like, a great experience at home watching it. It's tough to really, like, recommend, you know, the theatrical experience for
it's not
movies
an event
that...
Film.
Right, yeah, that's
it's
what I'm
not,
saying.
It's not Avatar.
But at the same time, like, I really do, you know, in a normal case, I would say don't see it in the theater, but I will, you know, strongly recommend that people try to check this out if you can, because eventually only event films are going to be the ones that even come to the theaters, and we're not going to have any choices when we go to an AMC or wherever, and it's just going to be Transformers 5 in 5D and these kind of ridiculous, like, things that you won't have the chance to see these smaller movies like Crazy Heart on the big screen anymore. They'll just come straight to your, you know, on-demand or straight to DVD even. And like, Maggie Gyllenhaal was saying that at the Q&A, like, this movie is gaining support because of all these nominations that they're getting, and it's, you just don't see independently financed movies, like, doing this anymore. Like, it's such a different economy in Hollywood right now with how sketchy all the money situation has
been.
Well,
I think, I mean, just let's, unrelated film to this, but if you talk about what's going on with Alice in Wonderland, with them cutting the theatrical release date
in the UK.
In the UK from, was it, from 18 weeks?
To 12.
To 12 weeks. So that they can get it out on DVD quicker.
Oh, is that why they did it?
That's why they're doing it. And they're the theater chains are boycotting the film.
And Disney doesn't give a crap.
And Disney doesn't care. Well, yeah, there's like, not as many theaters over there.
It's like,
take it or leave it.
Which is, I mean, it's really weird to have that kind of planning. And I just... I mean, who knows where this will be 10 years from now when we have all digital distribution of our films in theaters, because they'll all be digital by then.
Yeah.
You'll be able to, if a film is starting to bomb, they'll just swap it out so quick. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that kind of market goes. I mean,
and just like Ben was saying.
And just the quality of what you can get at home now.
Yeah, the on-demand stuff, I think, just especially for these indie films, where a lot of the films that were showing at Sundance, you could go like on the Sundance channel and demand it or whatever.
Yeah,
and you can watch it then, like right after the festival.
Yeah, and so, Magnet Releasing is doing this thing called like the Six Shooter Film Series that has like six different action movies over the course of the year that they release in theaters and limited release and do on demand at the same time. Like District B-13 Ultimatum, the sequel to
is available on demand. With these independent films, I mean, their budgets are so small that you're able to find your exact target,
yeah,
and to give them that content at a price that they would want. But I mean, there's some ways no substitute for the theatrical experience.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's this whole kind of sidebar has just been a long-winded way of me saying go see this movie in a theater because it'll help like the whole process. You know, it keeps smaller movies in the theater. It keeps studios wanting to, even smaller studios like Fox Searchlight saying, hey, this is a viable thing that we're doing here. Like, you know, Warner Independent, Paramount Vantage, all these kinds of, you know, quote unquote indie distributors have been closing down over the past couple of years. Like, it's sad to see that happening. And I'm glad Fox Searchlight and like Sony Pictures and some of these other ones are still around and dedicated to bringing these kinds of movies to the big screen. I just hope that people reward their efforts by going to see it in the theater. And it's not like, I'm not saying, oh, go see it just to support independent movies. I'm saying it's a good movie too. So
yeah, I think as time goes on, just seeing the lack of creativity and just the studio machine, I think already what we've seen with, let's say, Kick-Ass is a studio wouldn't touch the creation of a film like that.
Yeah,
and that money came out of independent. I think we're going to see hopefully larger independent made films. I'm not sure, but is Inglourious Basterds, was that pretty independently financed?
I don't know.
I think the Weinstein Company had a lot to do with that. Yeah. So
are they considered independent still?
I think so. Yeah, they're kind of on the mini major side of it, I think. But yeah, that's borderline.
Yeah. So I think we're going to start to see more of that.
Especially with, we're going off another tangent here, but the Red camera, making it so easy to get good-looking films on a budget.
Yeah, I mean, you have the priestcraft of cinematography and having hundreds of thousands of dollars of lenses and equipment you have to buy that you can now get. I mean, you could probably start a movie studio off of $100,000 practically nowadays.
Yeah.
So, which you couldn't even afford the camera.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was not even to the quality that the Red is at. So.
Yeah. So I think 95% of the movies at Sundance were shot on the Red camera,
and they all looked great.
They all look great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Solid. So yeah, Crazy Heart. Go check it out. Jeff Bridges, awesome. Maggie Gyllenhaal, really great work. The music was fun. There's also a guest, or not a guest, a...
How was Colin Farrell?
That
was a him?
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say.
Well, I mean, they show him in the trailer.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I've seen a couple trailers where they don't show him, I thought that they were trying to keep it a secret or whatnot, but...
And Jeff Bridges, he thanked, he gave a little shout-out to Colin Farrell.
Okay, so now that that cat is out of the bag, I'll just go into that for just a second, but... Colin Farrell was amazing in this movie.
He's a good actor.
He's a great actor. I love him. In Bruges was one of my favorite movies of 2008 or whenever that came out.
I'm trying to think of an actor of another generation that's basically just talented but used badly in many films. But I'm thinking of Daredevil as an example that comes to mind.
Yeah, he plays a guy named Tommy Sweet who is the kind of young, heartthrob country singer that's, really popular with all the kids or whatever now. And Bad Blake, Jeff Bridges, mentored him, on his way up and that kind of thing. And now, later in the movie, you find out that Bridges' character is kind of presented with the opportunity to open for Colin Farrell's character.
That happens in the music all the time. It's really, really
strange. Yeah, and, he's really pissed about it. Because he, kind of taught him everything he knows, he doesn't want to, go through that humiliation or whatever of opening for him, but he eventually just has to do it to take the money. He's that hard up for cash and stuff. And, I mean, they kind of reconcile a bit as the movie goes on. This is a movie, I said I wanted to avoid comparisons to The Wrestler, but since we're on it anyway, it's a lot more hopeful than The Wrestler is. And there's definitely, a lot more, clearly defined redemption in the film than in The Wrestler. But Colin Farrell, his accent, I don't know if you guys have ever heard him in interviews and stuff,
he's super Irish.
Hardcore Irish accent. You cannot
understand a single thing he's saying.
Yeah. And it's completely, not only is there no hint of the Irish accent, which he's always had a great American accent.
That Minority Report.
Yeah.
I remember first seeing it. And
Tigerland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've never seen that, but I heard it was decent. But yeah, not only is there no hint of the Irish, there is, he picks up a little country twang, and it's not like, oh God, Colin Farrell's doing a Southern accent. It's not eye-rollingly bad. It's good. He is just, he's great in this movie. He's rocking his hair back in a ponytail. He looks like a country superstar, and he sings in the movie too, and he sings, the song that I bought. It was a duet with him and Bridges, and both of those guys, you could totally, if you separate yourself from knowing that they're actors, they could legitimately, cut an album and be, a decent country act, I think. So, Colin Farrell was definitely, I knew that he was going to be in it, so I wasn't oh my God, it's Colin Farrell, whenever he appeared on the screen, but it was a nice surprise still, seeing how really great he was in this movie, but.
Very, very cool.
So that's icing on the cake for anybody who decides to go see Crazy Heart.
Cool. And speaking of accents, I think that kind of ends our Crazy Heart discussion.
Yeah.
But I remember that the TRS guy is kind of griping about what's his name, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers' accent from Paris with Love. Because I think with him, and when he portrayed Elvis, it was dead on. But with him and with Gerard Butler lately, it's just hard to listen to them and take them seriously when they do American accents because it's so overpronounced.
Yeah.
Everything they do is, I think, the thing they quoted from...
Well, we, as Americans, we overpronounce, but
you can overpronounce.
Yeah.
Just with, Gerard Butler, I remember, that's why I couldn't finish The Ugly Truth. One of the many reasons I couldn't finish The Ugly Truth was because he was so overpronouncing words. It was very strange. And you see him in The Bounty Hunter.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I cannot stand this.
Yeah. You know, just have your accent.
Yeah.
Just get over it.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so a game I've been playing, I haven't quite beat it yet. I have no idea where I'm at. Is Mass Effect 2. Obviously the sequel to Mass Effect. From BioWare. This is an Xbox 360 exclusive.
Give me the brief rundown, because I've never played Mass Effect or this one.
So, it's an RPG, but it's also got combat in it. and you're in space. It's got, I think, one of the slickest, well-done dialogue systems I've ever seen in a video game.
Cool.
Basically...
it's like a choose-your-own-adventure.
It's like a choose-your-own-adventure when it comes to the dialogue, because you get these branches that split off. So on the screen, you'll see, like, these quick little lines. And it's just, like, two words or a word, and or sometimes just a little sentence. But what your character says is completely different than what you picked, but it's in the spirit of what you picked.
Mm-hmm.
And what you choose is, like, it greatly affects what's happening. I recently played a mission where I totally screwed up, and there's no do-over.
Oh, wow.
So, I was like, oh, I wish I had known that. So, but, you know, in hindsight, you'll go, oh, well, if I replayed this game, I could totally... get that. But I mean, there's a lot of cool things like that. Now there's a few problems with the first game that are amazingly, they're just fixed, and it just makes the game so much more enjoyable. In the first game, we had amazing graphics. They're back and they're better, but you had this whole RPG element with, in terms of your inventory management, and it became a chore. Matching the different types of ammo to the different types of gun, and the upgrades to each gun, and then the tech to your... It was just a mess.
Yeah.
Trying to... That was like almost a mini game of of management.
So this...
not
and this one, game. It's been streamlined, but I don't feel like it's been made less. It's just made, like, easier to manage. So you just get your upgrades, that's it. If you want to change your ammo type, you do that in combat. And the combat is where there's the biggest level of improvement. Because before, it was kind of, things were a bit floaty, your targets were kind of weird. And this time around, if you want to play this as a shooter, you can do that, definitely. Which I think a lot of people did, in any case, even though they try to make it more strategic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool because you can map, you can do all sorts of stuff. You can have abilities, you can map abilities to buttons. And then you have your squad, who does a really great job of fighting back, and you can map their abilities, so you can do all sorts of cool commands and stuff. Something that's interesting out of it is that there's just so many types of missions this time. I think you see that with these new franchises. We've seen that with the Assassin's Creed. You launch this new IP, and you basically need to invent all this technology, but because by the time you get to the second one, you're not inventing anymore, you're refining. And that's what's great about video games, say, versus movies, is that the sequels are always better, right? Usually, because they're just refining the technology and building on something better.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, they handle the way that the tech works in this a lot better. There's a lot... In the first game, you had this, like, rover thing that you went off to planets, and you drove around, and every planet pretty much looked the same. The terrain was just slightly different color, and that was pretty much it. That has been completely cut out, and now you take a shuttle, you jump out a shuttle from your main ship, and it's just like each world is completely different now. It's nice. Really, really great. Side missions, much improved. Before, you did the side missions, and I did them just because that's the kind of gamer I am. But now it just feels like you want to do it because, like, it's all this extra cool thing you get to see, because there's cutscenes and there's all sorts of stuff in it, and there's character things. And
so it's not just like an afterthought. It's very much a part of the game itself.
And then additionally, the amount of characters that are in the game and the people you can have on your squad are just, it's just a huge number. I happen to just read a little bit about towards what happened towards the end of the game, and it looks like it's going to be a pretty epic battle.
Nice.
The storyline is, I mean, there's no spoiler here, but like just at the beginning in the trailer alone, you just see that Shepard dies, and somehow he gets brought back, and that's kind of an evolving story through the whole thing. But then once you're back, you realize what's going on. You need to basically take and assemble basically the A-team of all these different kinds of bandits, assassins, and all these kind of guys. and then earn their loyalty to go on a suicide mission with you.
Nice.
To destroy these guys. Because basically, you're taking the fight to the other side this time. You're playing offense instead of defense this time, which cool. is pretty cool. But, I mean, the dialogue in this, I don't know. I mean, the game is on two discs, just to let you know how big the game is.
Jeez.
And there's so much dialogue. It's so well performed.
Yeah, I've seen Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen's
in
it.
One of these kind of like one of the characters, and Chuck's Yvonne Strahovski.
Yeah,
she looks exactly like she does in yeah. real life, which is pretty, pretty good. Thumbs up there.
Yeah, I mean the graphics are really good,
but they did something crazy, like with the way the eyes move, right? Like it looks. Like, a lot of times it looks very, very real.
They've gone into a lot of detail. I mean, it does not look like, say, Avatar, but it has that feeling that you are watching real people and you're watching real characters. I mean, and...
It's not, like, blocky and pixelated.
Yeah, there's some real... It's not Grand Theft Auto.
Okay.
And it's not that kind of cartoonish look to the face that they kind of do... To be able to get past some of the technical hurdles.
Yeah, I'm sure if some people have seen some of the commercials where it just kind of looks like someone's being interviewed.
Yeah.
You can tell, like, just the way the characters move and all the facial yeah. expressions are very, very real.
It's amazing the how much they've been able to fit into the game. And I don't even know if I'm even halfway through.
Yeah.
And
there's no way of really telling.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, like, if you go to different parts of the galaxy, you're on different discs just because it's so huge.
Is that how they do it with the
yeah.
with the discs? It's yeah. just, like, you cross a certain boundary and have to...
Yeah,
okay.
Basically.
Turn to page 75.
Yeah.
You've selected Don't Turn Left.
Yeah, if you're a fan of, like, say, RPGs, like, say, Final Fantasy, or these larger, like, Zelda... Things like that. Things where you like it's gonna take a while to play and you're yeah. gonna be in a bit of a grind. It's not.
I'm really into Tetris.
Yeah.
Am I gonna?
If you're like a shooter type of person who just likes, I just want to blow stuff up. I want to play with my friends online, stuff like that.
Yeah.
This might not be the game for you. But if you're a person who enjoys like really good storytelling in games and really enjoys like space, like, it's just like there's cool stuff where you can just like mine for minerals and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting little mini games gamble.
Cool.
Bet on some, you know. So, I mean, just...
It seems like a pretty vast expanse of things to do, so...
Yeah. I haven't finished it, but I would say, you know, this is a game to buy and play.
Cool. Very, very cool.
All right, so I think that's going to wrap it up for episode 62. Next week, we've got Shutter Island hitting theaters on Friday. I think Dr. Venkman and I are going to be both checking out some screenings of that this week before the release of it, so hopefully we'll be able to talk about that on the podcast next week.
I think me and Maze would probably be able to catch it as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be... I mean, I've heard some mixed buzz about it, but I freaking love DiCaprio, and Scorsese's amazing, so I can't imagine not liking it.
Yeah, one of the big things was that they postponed the release date, the mm-hmm. October release date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which makes you wonder... Yeah. I mean, they say...
I think there was some talk of it being in... awards consideration like yeah, they, early they, on they and then they're like
money to, they didn't have enough money to push it
the campaign or, so or whatever
yeah.
yeah
so they say
either way I'm looking forward to it. I think it should be entertaining, but
when is Scorsese putting out something bad?
Yeah, so. I don't know. Yeah, so that's it for this week. Stick with us all week. We'll be bringing you the best of the web news, you know, games, movies, all the stuff we normally take care of. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geektyrant and facebook.com/geektyrant. And yeah, have a good week.
Subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yes, iTunes, the podcast. Leave a review for us on iTunes if you want to do that, or comment section. Let us know what's going on, what you think we should cover in the future. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.